and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Volkelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast,
episode 635.
That's right. Back to some Green Lantern stuff yet again with Core 13.
Yeah, we're moving along. I'm not sure if this is a letdown from Green Lantern KO or not, but I don't know. At least the artwork's pretty good at moments in this issue. I guess I would not all the time, but I guess. But I guess there are some moments that it comes together. So
cover's got the dreaded white space.
Yeah, Chad's favorite. And what isn't white is a lot of blue and white. I do not like John Stewart's haircut. I wish he'd go back to his military haircut. Please. I know the uniform too is kind of, which is obviously probably why they based that new costume design probably on this one, because it looks like his. Potentially.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, he's leggings. Clearly inside of Inkhorn and, like, thrashing about and stuff. So, like, the perspective on his body is off, but it's not done well enough because it just makes it look like he's short and stocky.
Yeah, it does, but I'm going by looking at the leggings, if you will, the boots and how high they come up. That gives me the impression that this might be the costume that they try to base that paint job on that we saw in the Mattel figure, since this thing's clearly come up to his knees or past his knees in the figure when the old ones did not, his boots. Let's just dive into this. This issue is actually inside title is War for Oa, Morgan Hampton, Juan Jose Reap, Arif Prianto, colorist, Ian Herring, Hayao Canola, Chris Santamayor, Matt Herms, Hi-Fi, those are all the colorists, Dave Sharp, letterer. Cover artist Fernando Pissarin, Eau Claire Albert, and Arif Prianto. Not going to do the variant cover artist, even though I will for the hell of it, because there's only two, shockingly. Scott Galutsky and Ryan Gonzalez. Jillian Grant, Kathleen Wineski, and Paul Kaminsky remain our editing group. So where we left off last issue was, of course, Enquar, the individual, and the resurrected planet. We're fast approaching Oa. And so now we kind of begin in Media Reis here, where they've already arrived. He's already arrived. And essentially, and here's another thing, you know, I don't know why Larfleeze would be so gung-ho to fight this guy as opposed to just backing off and seeing how it plays out. But we kind of have these issues all along with this, the logic in some of these stories, that you have the Green Lantern Corps and all the other corps now fighting together. So they stopped fighting Larfleeze, and now they're trying to fight off Enquar's little water constructs here. And most of the narration here is by Fatality, as she's kind of she's quickly realizing that Enquar is pretty much flipped his raindrops here, and this is not really what she wants. But that's kind of that's kind of the moral of the story as this plays out, that she thought she wanted this, you know, the revenge, and was being blinded by revenge. But, you know, at the end of the day, it really isn't as satisfying. So maybe it isn't best dish served cold or anything along those lines. So we see as this starts playing out, John Stewart doesn't do particularly well. He gets engulfed by Enquar, who again, for some strange reason, doesn't suck him dry immediately, though he does take John Stewart's ring off. And Enquar, I don't know what really his goal is with Fatality, if he really feels a kindred spirit with her, as he says, or whether he has the hots for her, who knows, because he seems awfully intent on having her by his side. And she kind of makes it clear that she is not on board with what's going on here. Meanwhile, in the Indigo Tribe shelter, where I would say probably the character that's drawn arguably the best in this entire book is Indigo One. I do actually like this part, that Aya's trying to convince the Indigo tribe that, hey, we got to help because they're in trouble. And the Tromo's like, oh, well, at the end of the day, this is kind of the Green Lantern Corps' problem. Plus, if we sit this one out, you know, we might do okay. We might survive because their ultimate goal here is they need to find the reborn embodiment of compassion. You know, good old proselyte there. Indigo One, however, has a maybe she's thinking outside the box or big picture. And she says, hey, there may be a way for all these goals to work, to achieve both these goals and us to work together and get all what we want. So Aya and Indigo One go to deal with the incursion by Anquar. A fatality is in serious trouble here, but Indigo One shows up, temporarily kind of like zaps Anquar, and all of a sudden now, I guess she's making the rounds too, of being members of different corps, that now... And she's drawn fairly well, too, even though she doesn't really look like classic Fatality. She kind of almost looks more like either Carol Ferris or Wonder Woman in this issue. Fatality ends up becoming an Indigo tribe member, and now she's kind of like completely at peace, and she's thinking clearly from her perspective, and because her emotions are kind of being drowned out. And she comes up with a plan about how they need Mogo, and they have to use get the energy to like pour out of Mogo to attack the planet Anquar and to force the individual Anquar to go to defend it, because all that biological material that he's been collecting is essentially somehow is buried in this planet, and that's the source material. So if you can get to the source material, that will stop all this. I guess that makes sense. Here we have the most glaring typo in this issue when they're talking about SHIELD and it's spelled SHIELD. Great job, DC editorial, as always. Fatality keeps talking about, you know, she has clarity that she's never had before, and certainly not in years. John Stewart and Fatality are kind of like, they're running blocker, I guess, to try to keep Anquar engaged while, you know, Kilowog, St. Walker, almost all the other Lanterns go to Mogo. And so basically opening up Mogo, creating a focal point so they can funnel the energy into the planet, which works. John and Fatality end up diving into the diving in underneath the surface of the planet of Anquar to try to get to the source material. And at the end of the day, what really happens here, because that regarding the compassion, that Fatality tries to share compassion with Anquar as best as she can. And it clearly isn't going to work like you might have expected, to where he's going to end up being a Indigo tribe member. But somehow she ends up trapping. This seems to be such a common theme during the Jeremy Adams run. Somebody just gets captured and trapped behind something. So she ends up trapping him, capturing his essence into her necklace. And she feels somewhat responsible for, because he's the last of his kind, something she can relate to. She feels responsible for keeping him alive. So this may not be the best solution long term, but it's the best solution short term. And that's kind of how that ends. We have some more kumbayaing with the members of all the corps coming together. Now Larfleeze all of a sudden is on board, because when they were working together on Oa, all of a sudden the power that they all felt together was immense. Again, all this mumbo jumbo. Mogo, I guess, pushes the now redesolated planet of Anquar back to a safe distance away from him and or Oa. We get some mumbo jumbo with the Thanagarians, going to be helped out too. Fatality, the master plan for, I guess, Fatality from the Indigo tribe's perspective is that she is going to be the next host of Proselyte, which would kind of be interesting, actually. I'd be down for that. And the very end, which is so weird that they're calling that we get a name of the capital of Oa. I'm not really a big fan of that. Malachite. I liked it better when we didn't just go to Citadel.
They've been saying Malachite this entire series.
Well, I know, but I'm saying I liked it before they gave us that manufactured name or new name, retcon name, whatever it is. So the issue ends, and they make it clear this is post DCKO because we have Guy, who's been picking out on as much junk food as humanly possible, and he's about ready to go to bed. And as he starts closing his eyes, we hear, Guy Gardner, you've been granted a deeper sight. And he wakes up and he opens his eyes, and hovering around him are the images of all the babies. And some of these guys look absolutely horrible. Most of them, to be fair, all baby formed representations of the original question mark because of Parallax. All the original entities, the emotional spectrum, and Ion is speaking to him and saying, use the psych to find this guy before those who wish to exploit us do. Time is running out. And Guy's like, why are you guys babies? So next issue is, why the emotional entities are babies? Find out! Friggin' Predator looks just like a xenomorph.
Yeah, and Ophidian's head is not snake-like whatsoever.
No. Adara's okay. I can live with Prozolite. I can live with Adara. Ion looks ridiculous. Ion looks like a friggin' guppy.
Parallax looks like a demonic cherub.
It's kind of what they were making Timu Parallax look like, so I guess. But either way, because we have to believe that's exactly who this is, because we know they're going to be dealing with Parallax soon enough, which is what, not next issue, but the issue after, right? I believe, based on the solicits. So
pacing continues to be an issue in the Green Lantern books, and we talked about this the last time we covered Core. But again, another example here, because Jeremy goes too slow, Morgan Hampton seems to be going too fast. Because all of this came out of nowhere within just a few issues of everything happening with the Starbreaker Corps, which is fine. It's nice to get a Green Lantern story told with some pace, but this is going so fast that it doesn't make sense in some cases. Because the last time we saw everybody, Larfleeze had just detonated the equivalent of an emotional nuke.
Yep.
And it was just a giant construct of himself as opposed to a giant version of himself or whatever, trashing the city. And the Thanagarians were influenced by the orange power and attacking core members as well. So we have no resolution to that. We don't see, they say that the Hawk, they mentioned things. See, things are happening in a tell don't show fashion, which is not what you want in a comic book that has both prose and art. And the fact that they tell us that the Thanagarians helped with this latest crisis, but don't show them in any of these panels. And I am making sure I'm correct in saying this, because I am just paging through various things here, and I am not seeing them anywhere except that last page, that last panel we see them at where Simon's talking to them. So last we saw the Thanagarians, they were in crisis. I like Yura becoming a Compassion Lantern. That's cool. The idea of her trapping him and forcing him to view good deeds, okay, I guess. But I was never really tied into Inquar, because they lost me once he used all of this power to restore his people. And he explicitly said that he could grant them their own, you know, kind of sentience and self-control, but it didn't meet his ends, only for this planet to be desolate yet again. And then they, again, in tell don't show fashion, they talk about the impact of Inquar's attack on Oa by saying, while we suffered losses, I think some good will come from this. What losses? I didn't see anybody die. This is the problem with the scaling of crises in the DC universe. And I don't necessarily just mean crisis events, though they can be included. Is we have this thing where somebody, leaves the Owen science cells and is able to enact this plan of revenge on the Owens by resurrecting essentially his entire planet and sending it hurtling towards Oa for an attack on the entire planet. It rains down, floods Malachite City. At first I thought it flooded Oa, but clearly it didn't. It's just Malachite. But even then, you would think, especially with some of the background panels we've been seeing in this series, that these cities and these various sections of Oa are populated not just by Lanterns, but by other alien beings, and not just by refugees like Thanagarians, but just other random alien beings, that there is no stakes here because we see nothing. You're telling me that we suffered losses and stuff has happened, but nothing really matters at the end of this.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, we have the same basic problem. Where is the real motivation for Larfleeze to be fighting with them? Why? Really? I mean, because especially since we did not see the attack on Oa begin, that why? I mean, again, he has his axe to grind is clearly against the Green Lantern Corps. So Larfleeze could have just literally taken his ball and gone home at this point, which is not un-Larfleeze like to begin with, and just let it all play. I mean, the Indigo tribe, again, was, and they were kind of being true to themselves also, because of the fact that they did, what was that in God? It was Godhead they did that, right? Was it in Godhead? That's when they did. That's when they kind of stabbed everybody in the back because they kind of just walked off and did their own thing. I think that was in Godhead. That they just took their ball and went home because it was in their best interest or because they cut a deal with the new gods or whatever it was. But it is very much in Larfleeze's wheelhouse to just say, well, this really isn't my fight anyway. So why am I here? You always have to convince him to do anything right. So I don't necessarily know why he would stay and fight with them to begin with. And then all of a sudden, could they give him a friggin' seat at the table that's his own that all of a sudden makes him happy enough where he's not? It's like you said, part of this is everything's just being sped up 1,000 times. And it's kind of getting old. It's like, oh, we felt this. And it's like, well, yeah, I felt it too. It's like, well, you'd never know that somebody felt it. This thing, and they referenced it in the last issue. It's like, well, it's just, we're being told, we're not being shown that aspect of it. And it's like, okay, the entity is his baby's part. Yeah, we already know that kind of, it's not surprising because we saw them small and little in tubes. Now, why they're that way? Is that just because of what Krone is doing? That part is interesting, of course, but I don't know. It's the fact that we just had a slight little reference to the fact that John locked up Cat Matui, and it's like, well, I did it to protect you, but maybe now we should talk. And then it's like, okay.
I really doubt we're going to see that conversation. It's possible because we have the solicit of John being, consumed by Parallax. So some sort of crisis is happening within him. But so we're going to get some focus on him again, not just this guy thing that we're clearly leading into. But I just because of the way things have been going again in a tell don't show fashion, I don't know. I have no faith that we're going to see that conversation because I think they did a good job setting it up because the emotions that she felt definitely got amplified by that orange ray wave, but they didn't get created out of nothing.
Yeah.
So there's clear, they set up some tension between them, which makes sense given that she's kind of an echo of his wife. So there needs to be some resolution. And we haven't seen anything about their relationship because we haven't seen John, this John, and how he's about, how he found her, how he approached her, what he told her, you know, ABCD, what she knows. Like, we don't know anything about this relationship. But I have no faith that we will learn anything anytime soon. And the other problem I have, did you notice that Kelly's in this too?
Yeah, I noticed Kelly.
Or sorry, Ellie Rose. She's in one panel.
I noticed somebody was in the, and I thought that was Kelly. Somebody was flying.
Kelly is definitely in there because she's like helping Saint Walker when he's like losing his footing in the sky or something like that. She's got her arm around him, and that first page, like she's right in front of him, and then the third panel down, like she's all over this first page.
Yes,
so Kelly is there, but Ellie Rose is in that panel on Mogo where they're firing their rings towards the center to create this construct funnel. Because if you follow the blue, there's Saint Walker on the left. If you follow the other blue.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's supposed to be her.
Yeah, that's supposed to be Ellie. But again, last time we saw Ellie, it was on Mogo, so it makes sense. But like, they don't say the word Ellie. They don't, like, it's just you even zooming in, you can barely tell it's her. Plus, it's not a construct. It's clearly, that looks like skin on her face. And the only way you can tell is one, it's a blue lantern, and two, the bubbles. The text bubble is a different colors to indicate that it's coming from the construct Ellie like we've seen. So, like, I don't know. There's
And even Indigo
there's
One.
Lack of detail here that bothers me.
And even Indigo One is, I mean, maybe that's by choice that she's channeling the green.
Yes.
Sheesh, but obviously that's not highly critical because you have blue, yellow, and red mixed in. So it's not critical that the energy being focused to open up that part of Mogo be green. So why would she just not use her own energy? That might actually seemingly be more efficient if I don't know. It's
the other part. I just want to say this real quick. Didn't Inquar say something to the effect of he controls all the water on the planet now in the previous issue when he?
I don't know if that's how he phrased if he phrased it.
Okay, I will find it and then yeah. So you go to your next point. I will find it.
So obviously, Juan Jose over here draws women well. That seems to be something he's particularly good at because almost every woman drawn in this book looks good.
Correct.
That Fatality looks good. Even Aya looks good, even though it's kind of hard to make Aya look good because her design is odd. But obviously Indigo One probably is the best Indigo One's ever looked. The splash page with Fatality's face is in the middle when she does when she doesn't even look like really Fatality. But still, Carol Ferris. It's supposed to be her as a Star Sapphire. But again, because the shading is off, she looks more white than she really is. But still, she's drawn beautifully in that splash page. But you get basically the recap of Fatality's life here and her career as a Green Lantern hater and then an ally. So, and Jessica in a few, when we see Jessica, but now again, does she really look like Fatality? No, I don't think she's really drawn like classic Fatality, but she's drawn very, very well. So I could kind of live with this. I do think it's interesting for whatever reason she seems to be. It does seem that she's not quite as dark skinned as she normally is. That's kind of I'm not quite sure.
When Inquar distributes himself in the first part of issue 12, Yara says the water, it's all you. He says every single ounce is at my command. Okay.
Yeah.
So then why is it a good idea for them to dive headfirst into the planet's waters to dig down to the center and find the center? Because if every single ounce is at his command, why do we even have to bother with him creating these water construct fish creatures and stuff like that? Like for him to have to create a specific thing to go after them if every single ounce is at his command.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Now, for what it's worth, he seemingly does confront them with the same question that you pretty much raised. It's like, why would you think this is a good idea? Basically, why do you think this is a good idea that why do you think this is going to work? But obviously, it does because the story needs it to work.
Yeah, I don't know. Just maybe because he's fighting off this shield or I don't know. It makes no sense why he would have to create his own constructs if every single piece is at his command. I don't. You're diving face first into the water and you need air to breathe. He just flood their lungs. Like I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how solid the logic of all that biological material that he's been taking that it would just be deposited in the center of the planet or wherever it is. I don't know how logical that actually is. I guess based on the way he resurrected the planet, I suppose you could make a case there's a certain believability in that. But it is also interesting, right, that Fatality does not have a staff.
Yeah, that's true.
That's kind of a maybe
she'll get her sorting hat later.
Maybe. Or maybe again because their goal, why they picked her to begin with, is because they want her to host the entity. So maybe it's not as critical that she has a staff because the whole point is just she's going to end up being the host. Going to be the host of a... Now, it would have been cool if her staff was like more like her spear. That would have kind of been cool. Almost, I mean, maybe like double ended. That the bottom of it was a spear, but the top was the oval.
Yeah, but maybe we'll do that. We'll see.
Yeah, that's true. But
otherwise, that's really all I got. It's I want to be completely honest. I like the art just as Mark mentioned, especially when we get close ups like when her and John are talking in that last thing, and she's got her hand over her chest, and she's gesturing towards the necklace, her hair, the facial features, so on and so forth. John doesn't look particularly great from this angle, but she looks fantastic. So there's good things to be had here. I like the overall plan. I like Yara getting becoming a lantern. I like the idea of switching focus now from John to Guy with this new thing, although we know that focus is going to go back on John. So I guess it's just focus shifting away from the new lanterns who have completed their training and earned their rings, I guess, worth noting there, and our full-fledged Green Lantern. So, you know, we're kind of shifting a half of our main character cast in terms of focus over to Guy. But, you know, again, it's just the pacing of it throws me off wildly, because we're riding the brakes on Green Lantern to the point where we had three issues of filler. And we're accelerating too fast to make us any sense of the exit road signs in this series. So I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. I would still probably lean towards the pacing we've gotten in this book, though, over the last two issues, yeah, just because all this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
And maybe, like you said, it may be happening too fast, arguably or inarguably, but at least stuff is happening and it's moving the plot forward, as opposed to three issues later with Jeremy, and we're not any closer to having, you know, any concrete movement in Hal's story, either with Carol or with Krona or with any of that. So,
yeah, that's all I got, though.
Yeah. Cool.
What's next?
Let's roll through some of this stuff first. What I've seen last week, I saw Whistle, which was either that or Dracula, and I'm glad I didn't see my choices have been good lately, because I guess Dracula was the mystery movie on Monday night that I had a chance to go to see, other than the fact that the mystery movies are always at Regal, are always like 7 o'clock on a Monday. So except for like a holiday one, like this one coming up, weather permitting, that really doesn't work for me. 7 o'clock, I can't do a 7 o'clock movie on a weeknight, certainly not on Monday. That I really only wanted. It only looked somewhat interesting because I like Daphne Keene, X-23. So she was the main star of that. It was pretty. There was a good movie in there somewhere. There were some cool aspects of it. The concept behind it was interesting. But there were some of the characters. This was a classic example in a horror movie of certainly writing some characters as stereotypes and then having characters do stupid things that really make it hard to follow as far as really caring, because people make really bad choices or illogical choices, or it's like, oh no, we can't do this, and it's like, why can't you do this? Look at what the alternative is, or look who you're trying to protect, as opposed to who is going to get hurt if you don't do this. It's like, I don't know. It was one of those movies. So it's not going to be in the theater long, I'm sure. So I'm trying to remember which studio distributed this, like, so which platform it's going to end up on, but it's definitely something to watch on cable. I did not mention that I watched Wonder Man. I had finished Wonder Man. I did doze off on one of those episodes, to be fair, but I did watch the beginning and I did watch the end. I liked Wonder Man. I thought it was pretty good. Plus Ben Kingsley is Trevor Slattery is always good. But I did like the relationship between Simon and Trevor. So I'd like to see more of them. I didn't mention on HBO Max that I forgot to mention that Smashing Machine has been on for a couple of weeks, the Dwayne Johnson movie. The movie he did not get nominated for an Academy Award for, which it would be interesting if he would have, if the movie had actually turned out to be financially viable, if that was held against him or not. But I would recommend at least watching it on HBO Max. Speaking of this, and my constant battles with streaming services, I did notice that apparently Disney Plus has followed in the footsteps of HBO Max, which was, I know, because I noticed this the other night, because I went to put Pirates on, the original Pirates, for the first time in a century, to fall asleep to. And I watched like 20 minutes of it. I fell asleep. And then I woke up about 2 hours plus later, and what am I waking up to? The very beginning of Dead Man's Chest. And it's like, why is it playing another movie? This is not the way Disney Plus operates. But I guess Disney Plus must have turned this feature on. If they had it all along, they turned it on. But the good news is, this feature you can turn off, because they turned it off and tested it tonight. that if you go into your Disney Plus profile and you edit your profile, click on your profile, there is an option to turn off playing. Forget how they phrased it, but you'll see turning off the next episode or playing the next thing. I forget exactly their terminology, but there is a way to turn that off. Just like there's a way to turn that feature off in Amazon Prime, by the way. But of course, you can't do it in the app. You have to go on and do it on the computer in your Amazon account under Prime. And I think under Prime, and I think it's might be devices. If someone has a question, I can find it. But I didn't care about Prime. I don't mind the Prime Plays thing after another. But I did test it tonight, and I turned it off, and it does work. Now, one last thing before we – now, this goes back to a movie that – this is a fun fact that I didn't know about. You may know about it. But now, we both like the movie Coherence. You and I, the main actress in that movie, who at the time's name was Emily Foxler. And technically, I think that there may have been a middle initial thrown in her name at some point, because I know it's one of those things where sometimes somebody's early appearances, they have two different technical names appearing as. But Emily Fox, do you know what Emily Foxler's name is now, Chad?
Mm-mm.
It's Emily Baldoni. And it's Emily Baldoni, as in, yes, Blake Lively's best friend. She is Justin Baldoni's wife, right? I actually saw a picture of her today, by luck of the draw. I was planning on mentioning this anyway, but because I saw some news article today about how both Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively were both in court today, and there was a picture of Justin Baldoni, I guess, either coming into the courtroom or going out of the building, and he was holding hands with, yes, Emily Foxler. So I just thought that's one of those, like, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing. It's like, of all people in the world for her to end up married to, but right now it's Justin Baldoni. But Coherence is still a good movie, so I guess that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah, good indie film.
Yeah,
thriller.
Yeah, because I watched that over the weekend a couple of times, and I was checking the I watched a horror movie on Prime. I think it was Bloodfest, and I wanted to see what the IMDb rating reviews were for that movie. And I said, you know what? I haven't checked the ratings or the reviews on Coherence in a while. And that's when I saw that they're not listing her as Emily Foxler anymore. And I'm pretty sure the only difference before was there was like another initial, or there was some modification of the same basic name. But now it just lists her as like Emily Baldoni. And it's like, it can't be that Baldoni, is it? And yes, and I clicked on it and I looked. It's like, yeah, she's married to Justin Baldoni. Small world.
It's a small world.
That's all I got.
All right. Did you want to talk about Monarch then?
Yeah, we can talk about that trailer for a little bit. Like I said, I'm in the dark from the perspective that I never watched season one. So I just know conceptually it looks interesting. Anna Sui is gorgeous. I like Kurt Russell. Had one of the better Super Bowl commercials, Kurt Russell, which isn't saying much, because just like the game, I thought the commercial landscape was pretty barren. But it is interesting, the idea of having another Titan X, of having this Titan that nobody knows anything about, which seemingly does not really come naturally from our world. And yet somehow, and again, the timeline is going to be, this is where it gets confusing based on how they're going to do the timeline stuff. Because when Kong and Godzilla are both going to fight this Titan at some point. But yet, now did you watch season one of Monarch?
Yeah.
So that takes place definitely before Godzilla versus Kong, right?
Yeah.
It almost has to, because Skull Island's still around. So there is. So that's why I'm kind of. So you know, Godzilla and Kong literally can't. I mean, realistically, they can't literally team up side by side to fight anybody at this point, because there's no way that would ever happen. So it's got to be one leading. Basically, one. They want one to fight him on the land and one to fight him on the water, I suppose. Or to weaken one so the other one can finish him off. I don't know. It looks.
One
it looks
if by water, two if by sea, or yeah. One if by land, two if by sea.
Mothra. yeah. So it. It looks interesting. I don't think Monarch is on any other streaming service at the moment. Anything that free? I don't think.
No.
Because I would like to watch it. Brief tangent. I did notice that right now on Disney Plus and the free Hulu area, they do have Alien Earth available. They do have that season of Alien Earth. So I do want to watch that ASAP before it becomes not free anymore for Hulu. And it's one of those things you have to pay to unlock. But yeah, I would like to. I thought the trailer was pretty good. I just think it's very surprising that most of the mainstream YouTube reviewers have not done a reaction video to it. I just kind of think that's odd.
Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, sometimes like streaming service access is different in other countries. So they will release things they won't release on hard copy here and hard copy elsewhere to get it out there. So I checked. I'm checking eBay right now for season one on Blu-ray, but everything is coming up like Malaysia, China, Japan. And it just seems like none of these are actual photos of a Blu-ray disc. None of them seem like official releases. Basically what I would be looking for is like a region-free format.
Right.
And everything I'm seeing is like the same image, the same greenish image, and nothing that's an official photo of a Blu-ray. The only thing that even looks like Blu-rays are just digital mock-ups of that same greenish image. So yeah, I don't know. But speaking of season two looks good. The involvement of both kaiju, despite it reports that it seemed like Godzilla wasn't going to play much of a part in this. And I guess it's still possible he might not play as much of a part as he did in season one. So still could be some truth to all of that. But in terms of screen time in the trailer, it seems fairly equal between him and Kong. So who knows? I'm curious where they go with it. See, the thing I'm most curious about with season two, besides the new Titan, which Titan X seems like it's it could be a MonsterVerse Biollante. We can't entirely rule that out because it shares some design elements and stuff like that. But as Mark and I were talking about before the show, Mark had said it's just very Kraken-like, and I agree. And much to the point, like, I think it reminds me of the Kraken as we saw it in the Aquaman movie. Now, just obviously a different, you know, different head shape and all of this other stuff, but, you know, very similar in, I guess, essential structure. But the thing I'm most curious about with this is them to explore the concepts that they introduced in season one, which is basically these pockets, essentially, between, you know, our world, the surface world, and Hollow Earth, these sort of in-between places where time is not really a factor, which I guess because they try to make this whole thing very scientific, this legacy universe or legendary, sorry. And they try to make very scientific explanations for things. And we are told that there's this weird inversion and sharp increase and so on and so forth in gravity in these wells that take you from point A to point B in the Hollow Earth. And we know that according to science that gravity can affect time. So like, I guess they can make those kind of distinctions, but it's just weird to me that time in Hollow Earth and time on the surface world is roughly equal, but somewhere in the middle place, it's skewed in that, you know, somebody who was in this, I apologize, this is a spoiler for season one. Somebody who was lost in this middle place decades ago was only there for a couple of months or a couple of weeks, something like that. There's this weird time dilation effect to the whole thing. So I'm interested for them to explore that space a little bit more. And obviously I'm interested to see more Titan stuff. And especially if it turns out to be true that this Titan X is like Ghidorah in the fact that it's non-native to our planet, that would be also something interesting to explore because they touched on that about Ghidorah, but then we just let it go after King of the Monsters. We've had two movies since, and we haven't really touched on the idea that alien life forms non-native to this planet, regardless of whether it's surface or Hollow Earth, just non-native to the planet, are a thing. So I would hope that if that turns out to be true for Titan X, that we circle back around to that concept, because then we open the doors for things like Space Godzilla.
Well, that obviously is going to be the most likely. If we're going to get any more exploration of the Ghidorah coming from the great beyond, that's probably going to be the Space Godzilla thing. That gateway is probably where we will be more likely to have somebody walk through and explain and tie it and re-educate us on why for those who have forgotten and flesh it out. It's like, oh, this is probably how this happened, or this is how it could have happened, and or a byproduct thereof. So yeah, I won't be watching it anytime soon since I don't have Apple TV, but we'll be able to find out what happens, which is the important thing. But yeah, we'll see. It looks interesting. It's the hodgepodge of the time jumps and stuff that make it, on some level, that makes it intriguing to me and how it's all going to mesh together based on the movies that we already saw.
Right.
They have taken place after this.
Yeah, for sure. We just wanted to say it now because it's concerning to me a little bit. I don't know if maybe I'm just being paranoid and this is common in the toy industry. The Jessica figure hasn't shipped yet, guys, as we record this. It has been nearly a month now since I placed that order, right? Because it was placed on January 16th, wasn't it?
I think so. I think that was around.
So as we record this, we're about 5 days out from it being officially a month, and it said that the figure release is on the 6th, and it's still just a pending transaction, and they're still waiting on stock and stuff like that. So it is strange that it hasn't shipped, especially given that I was at Target the other day and saw two of the Jay Garrick figures on the peg, and the Jay Garrick is a Chase or Platinum version of the Flash, and we know that Green Lantern and Flash are part of the same wave, so they should have dropped at the same time because we've been seeing HALs in stores. I saw a HAL at a GameStop the other day as well. So Jessica is out there, so why GameStop is dragging their ass on getting this thing shipped, I don't know why.
I don't think it's anything to worry about at the moment. I mean, not really. I mean, it's only been about a month. Not everything ships on time. That Lord knows. I mean, I can't tell you the number of things that they give you an estimated release date on, and things get pushed back so far. I went to check on that. Oh God, the hell! Now I got to remember the name of the company. That cool Hal Jordan figure that they solicited like a year ago. Beast Action. That one, I was this close, like today, I was this close to actually canceling my order on it because of the fact that I think it was April last year that I ordered it. And now, mind
Beast
you, right?
Kingdom.
Beast Kingdom, that's it. I knew it was Beast something. I was this close to canceling my order, but if you actually look at it, at least on their site, they say, I think,
March.
Yeah, that's the only reason I didn't, because it's just around the corner. I've waited this long. It kind of would suck to, I mean, it is a nice figure. So of course it's in flux about how much they're actually going to charge you for it because of the stupid tariff stuff, since they weren't, their original price is low. But if you actually look at what they estimate it's going to cost now, it's different. But that's an example. That's a figure that I think was supposed to come out in the fall. That originally I think was supposed to come out in the fall last year. And here we are, it's at least going to be a quarter behind. But you were correct though. I'm looking at eBay. There's tons of these Jessica Cruz figures out there. So obviously,
yeah, it's out there. I just don't understand.
Yeah,
they're not saying like it's gonna be like an order that's fulfilled at a later date or something like that, right? Because sometimes those eBay listings will go up. It's like, well, we don't even have the thing yet, but when we do, we'll ship it to you.
I am not looking at all of these, but I'm going to assume that's not the case because there's so many of them. And it's, yeah, because if that was the case, remember, I think we looked shortly after these things dropped and there weren't that many on eBay. So I am pretty sure the majority of these people have actually in stock. Let's see what it says. Yeah, if you were, I'm looking at one that the buy it now price is $59.99. The estimated arrival is between the 14th and the 20th. So that's safe to say that at least according to how they have it listed, they have it in stock. So plus there's way too many of these. Now none of these are going for ridiculously crazy prices compared to my never going to get Spectre Hal Jordan figure. But I do not like that packaging though. I really don't like that packaging. I didn't like it on Hal and I really don't like it on Jessica. But I would suspect we'll probably somewhere by the end of the month, I'm going to suspect this thing's going to ship.
Yeah. just one thing I wanted to mention, speaking of things shipping, because I'm waiting on that to ship. I'm waiting for my order I placed on Big Bad Toy Store to ship. I pulled the trigger the other night on getting that Thunderstrike figure that was on sale. And also they had, and I don't know if you had ever seen it, but the Turtle Van they made into a Transformer.
Yeah, I think I did see that, actually.
It was like $50 or $60 retail, but they had it on sale on Big Bad Toy Store. So I just I had to get it because the sale, the price point was what was keeping me away from picking it up initially, because I saw it in stores at both Target and at GameStop on separate occasions. But I just kept putting it back on the shelf because it was just too much money. And I happened to be just poking around Big Bad, and I was like, you know, I was literally just using search term. I was like, all right, what Gambit stuff is out there? What Venom stuff is out there? Pokemon, so on and so forth. I just, you know, typed in TMNT, and it's 25% off. It's normally $50, and it's $37.49. So I was like, all right, well, Amazon still got it full price and everywhere else, so I guess I'll be picking this up finally. So I finally get to add that to my collection. But all of that to say, the other thing I'm still waiting on is I placed an order for the Superman New Krypton Omnibus Volume 1. I talked about this briefly before, but when Blackest Night was happening, the other events that I was really into around that era were the JMS's run on Thor, with Olivier Coipel leading up into Siege and all that other stuff, where basically Asgard is resurrected floating over Oklahoma and so on and so forth. The other thing I was really picking up at that time in single issues was Sterling Gates and Jeff Johns and James Robinson and Greg Rucka when they were doing the New Krypton stuff, where basically after the Jeff Johns Brainiac story, Kandor, the bottle city of Kandor is restored to normal size in the Arctic, and it's up there for a little bit, but then that obviously becomes a problem. So, because now suddenly Earth has a bunch of people with the powers of Superman, an entire populace of them on the planet. So things go awry. So they just using their, you know, the technology as we saw it in Superman Returns, where the crystals can create, you know, mass and stuff like that. They create an entirely new planet on the opposite side of Earth of the sun from us in the same orbit, so that they do all that. It was just so much fun. It led into World of New Krypton, and it led into War of the Superman, and it was just such a great thing. And it's finally being collected in a omnibus format, and I ordered that the other day. It's retail price, $125. I paid $75, obviously before taxes and fees and stuff. Shipping didn't cost anything because shipping is free on orders over $50. I sound like I'm advertising, but I'm not. The reason I mention this entirely is because as you guys hear this, next week, the 24th, is when the Green Lantern Dark hardcover is coming out. So if most new releases like this Krypton Omnibus are 40% off, I know that this thing being a hardcover is going to be a lot to swallow price-wise for some people who just want to try out Green Lantern Dark. It's probably if they were decided to release this in hardcover version first, I would bet that it's going to take a little while before we see another solicit of this, but soft cover. They usually let those things run like a year or two before they bother with a soft cover. So if price point on a hardcover is a blocker to you to getting Green Lantern Dark all collected in an edition, buy it on in-stock trades the day it drops on the 24th, because it'll be, with a discount, it should be about the price of a soft cover.
Yeah, I mean, if people who are interested or people who never got a chance to read it but want to read it now that it's been collected, yeah, that would be the time to strike.
For sure. And it comes with a Lantern Cast stamp of approval.
Unlikely to be achieved by Absolute Green Lantern.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, if people want to listen to us, what do they do?
LanternCast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook. Hashtag GLCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a voicemail or a text, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Stay tuned, everybody, because next week, big episode, special episode, celebrating a big pop culture anniversary.
Yeah, figure it out, man.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.